my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Hello, and you are very welcome to The Plug-In, the show that talks about most things electric, and each episode we might have a different topic, and this year is entering into a new decade, and I am here with Paul Brooks, and we're going to talk about new car sales and new types of cars on the market, and it's a whole manufacturer-based episode this week, Paul, so good day to you.
Yeah, good day to you as well, and the season's greetings and New Year to you.
Ah, yeah, I'm sure Christmas is over now and we can all sort of put aside the turkey for another year and see how we get on. But we are going to cover a number of topics over the course of the hour, and we'll try and have some structure to it. And I suppose generally for this episode of the show, it is going to be, as we said, a car-based show. We'll say we do like to talk about other things in relation to the whole energy market, and we'll say things like solar panels and battery-powered pieces of equipment and stuff like that, and other ways that the climate may be used to harness energy, but not for this episode. So that's a whole new show and a whole different time, which we will get to in the near future. So this year, Paul, as we said, it's the start of a new decade. And whereas I don't know, what do we call the year between 2010 and 2019? We can't call it the tens. It doesn't sound right. You know, they call the 00 to 09, the noughts.
Yeah, it's hot now.
We could be going into the roaring 20s.
The roaring 20s sounds good,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. So I suppose this is going to be mainly an electric car episode, and there are a few different types, we'll say, that we'll give a brief mention to, because there are going to be a lot of new models and new manufacturers entering the fully electric fray over the course of the next 12 to 18 months. And we're going to talk about some of the models that are going to be on sale in Ireland. But I suppose a little bit like putting the cart before the horse and the egg before everything, you need to talk about, we'll say, what infrastructure is in place in the country.
In Ireland's case, usually the lack of it.
Pretty much the lack of it. So I suppose there's one of the things that I'll just sort of go off in a little bit of a tirade about, is that the ESB, we say e-cars, is a project that basically they got grant funding for, I think it's maybe 9 years ago now, to assist with the rollout of electric cars in the country. And like most things in Ireland, it sort of has taken its time. And it is only in the last, especially in the last year or so, that what looks like a little bit of change has started to appear, and a little bit more choice has started to appear in the country. So ESB eCars has basically upgraded a lot of their charge points around the country, and they had initially said that they were going to bring in monetary charging, we'll say, for the use of same in 2018, but it didn't happen until the tail end of 2019, and it's not fully in yet. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the whole concept behind, you know, if you can't really go from having a market that's selling maybe, you know, 1 or 2% of the new car sales of the year electric to, you know, 10-20%, or the great climate action plan to have 960,000 electric cars on the road by 2030, which is pure fanciful work, I think, but without a charging infrastructure. And a little bit along the way of, you know, education goes a long way, and Paddy needs to get educated, because the way that sort of Paddy thinks about the charging network as exists at the moment is that, oh, if it's free, I'll use it and I don't give a shite about anybody else, and I'll sort of put my car in there for as long as I want. Now, the whole concept behind, we'll say, getting an electric car, Paul, is, I suppose, it can be classed as people do it for different reasons. You know, they might want to sort of help save the planet a little bit, and they mightn't want to be sort of inhaling diesel particulates around the place. And, you know, lots of people have different reasons. But the concept that, you know, we're trying to educate people on the show here and to literally dumb it down as simple as possible. And the basic premise, if you are thinking or going to buy an electric car, be it new or secondhand or whatever like that, the main thing that you have to get into your head is that you can't expect to pay nothing to charge your car when you're out and about. Would you agree?
I would say, I think we've discussed this over the past year. My personal view, you will end up with, you will have a charger at home and you will plug it in when you come home in the evening or whenever you finish using it, and you charge it overnight, and then in the morning you unplug it and off you go.
Yeah, and that is the concept. And we said, if everybody gets it into their head that if you have a charging point at home, okay, and we say as the last decade went on, the range of cars, the range that they could travel has increased, and we'll talk a little bit more on that in a few minutes. And as the range increases, the need to sort of, you know, to be plugging in every 20 miles down the road sort of disappears. But you get to the concept where you charge your car at night, you charge it at home. You literally have a plug out the back of your house or the front of your house, you know, depending where you are. Now, if you're in an apartment or if you're in an urban setting, that's a different state of affairs that we'll talk about at another day. But we're in rural East Clare at the moment, so it doesn't really apply as there aren't too many banks of apartments around the place. So we're not going to get bogged down in that. So the concept is that you have a charger at home, and the government give a grant of about €600 for it if you buy an electric car to get the charger. Charger roughly is about, maybe depending on you know what you get, and there's a few with bells and whistles and stuff like that, but you're basically talking about nearly €1,000. So it'll cost you about maybe €300 to €400 to put a charger in.
Yeah, could I ask, Luke, then, if what would you say then if you've got, now look, electric cars have all different size batteries, so let's just say a lot of them at the moment coming out, new ones, around 50 kilowatts.
Yeah,
all right, so that's like the size of your tank.
Yeah,
so you've got a 50 kilowatt, you're down fairly well low down in battery when you get home this evening. You plug it in, how long does it need to be plugged in until you've got 50 kilowatts in your battery again?
Most of the home chargers now are, they can charge at a rate of, say, 7 kilowatts an hour. So to sort of try dumb it down, if we're equating that we have an electric car with a 50-litre tank, okay? That's the equivalent of a car with a 50-litre tank. And if you say that the device that you have at home can put 7 litres into that car every hour.
Seven by 50, sir.
So roughly, now it would say the closer that it gets to the top, the sort of charge rate slows down.
Yeah.
So I think eight and a half hours max would, if your battery was empty, and most of the time it's not going to be empty, there might be 10 or 20% left in it, or you could have 50%, you know, so it takes longer. So the concept is that you charge on the night rate. Okay.
And you can, now we won't get into the nitty gritty, but I know with either the charger or the car, you can program it so it doesn't start charging until the night rate kicks in.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you're charging it, what, half the price? So let's say 10 cents or something like that.
Yeah, the basic, I suppose you give the basic figures that we'll say if you're paying 20 cents for a unit of electricity,
a full whack,
the night rate is basically half that, you know, give or take. There are different providers out there, and it goes from, I think, you know, maybe 8.7 2 cents to maybe 11.2 or something like that.
And you have to say, Luke, that if you were contemplating getting an electric vehicle, a fully electric vehicle, it's a pretty, well, a no-brainer that you get a night rate in. I know you pay, is it something like 50 or 60 euros a year more to have a night rate meter in, but if you can charge at night, it's a no-brainer.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And the whole concept behind, you know, getting the night rate is you sort of look at your energy usage, you know, if you can, over a period of months. And generally they say that if you're using more than 30% of your electricity at night, that it's financially worth your while to get a night rate meter in. And we said the more mileage that you would be doing in an electric, and let's face it, in rural East Clare, most of us have to travel. you know, we start to count all, start to go, you know, half a mile to work or something like that. So you would be sort of charging on a regular enough basis, maybe two or three times a week. And, you know, if you're putting 50 units of electricity into your car two or three times a week, that's a nice bit of electricity, you know.
So 50 units, so you're putting 50 kilowatts into the battery if it was totally empty, which I know it wouldn't really be, but anyway, yeah. 50 units at 10 cent.
That's roughly it, yeah. Yeah.
So that's not, yeah. It's cheaper than a tank of petrol or diesel anyway.
Yeah, it is. Now, you wouldn't be getting the full range that you would on a tank of petrol or diesel or stuff like that. But, you know, it's all part of, you know, the process of you sort of get, you know, you have to try and explain the concepts to people that basically, you know, they think that there's ESB chargers around the country and that they should be free and that, you know, no one should pay to sort of charge their car. While they're sort of trying to get from A to B. You know, it'd be a little bit like, we'll say, if you wanted to go from here to Dublin and you said, right, I'll pull into, say, the Obama Plaza up in Moneygall, and there should be 20 chargers out there that I should pay absolutely nothing for, and I can go in and have my sort of, you know, spend 3 or 4 euros on my skinny latte or whatever else like that, or my... that you're happy to pay for, or a burger or chips, but no, you're not going to pay for, you know, for electricity because it should be free. You have to get that out of your head.
Yeah, so I mean, fundamentally, I know we're in agreement here is you charge at home, and then you are using then the chargers around the country when you can't charge at home, when you're on a longer journey and you need to top up to get home or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, if you said, for argument's sake, you were, you know, most people drive, I think, on average, less than 50 kilometres a day. So on the occasions, you know, we'll say if you were doing a long spin, and we'll say for us a long spin would probably say maybe from here to Dublin, or, you know, here to the west side of Cork or something like that. And if you needed to charge somewhere along the way, you could sort of pull in to a charger.
Get your latte
and sort of, you know, as one says, there's an app for that. Tap the app. And you start to charge, and then, you know, you pay for it. So that has begun to happen with the ESB, and they have brought in, we'll say, charging for their fast electric point chargers.
Now, that was only recently there, wasn't it? The past couple of months.
They announced it properly in October, and it came in November. Now, we'll say, without trying to confuse you too much, there's rapid chargers, there's slow chargers, there's fast chargers. Now, in Ireland, again, this is where the whole thing, we sort of get a little bit mixed up with things. The ESB are calling them fast chargers. And basically, the difference between a fast charger and what we'd class as a slow charger is the fast charger basically has three points on it, that basically there are three different types of device that you can sort of plug into it. So there's a sort of there's an AC, which is what the likes of, we'll say, a Renault Zoe would use. There's the DC that the likes of a Tesla or, you know, say a Hyundai Kona would use, or then there's the CHAdeMO, which is what the Nissan Leaf would use, which is DC as well, but with a different connector. They're starting to confuse people. I know, but there's three different connectors, but they're a bigger unit. So if you sort of want to know what's the difference between, you know, a post, if you're inside in Ennis and you're in the car park, the Abbey Road car park there across the road from the Queen's, there's a charger there, which is basically like a pillar that is standing up, and there's nothing attached to it. So you have your cable, we'll say, in the boot of your car, and you hook up to that. That's the what we would call like a normal charger. It's a slow.
And that's charger. The same as what you'd be having at home.
Yeah, it can be a little bit. It's a bit more powerful than what you'd have at home, but it depends on the type of car. But they're AC chargers. But then we'll say if you go to the likes of some of the petrol stations, and I think the in Ennis you would be talking about the Topaz, which is now Circle K opposite the West County. At the back of that, there's a triple head charger there, and this is the device that we'll say the ESB are now charging you money for, okay? And they're announced, we said, our price plans are going to be on a subscription or pay-as-you-go model, and we said they started charging financially for it on the 18th of November. So those bigger chargers at the ESB, we'll say, they can charge at 50, we'll say, they can literally put the equivalent of 50 litres worth of electricity into your car in an hour. Okay, that's what that's what they can do if your car can take it. Now, they are also introducing 50 high power charging hubs around the motorway and would say national roads over the next sort of 12 to 18 months. And that is where, you know, I'm talking about infrastructure and the need to have more physical charging points around the place. That is critical because we'll say it's a bit of a niche market at the moment. And if there are more new car sales coming, and towards the end of the last decade, you know, we'll say sales in 18 to 19 doubled what they were in 18. Now, I know it's from a very small base, but you even had the likes of, we said one of the Tesla Model 3s was the best selling car in November 2019 in Ireland, but that was partly because there was about five cars a month, you know.
And it was delivery, wasn't it? That the Model 3s were arriving in the country, should we say, at that time.
Yeah. Exactly, you know, but...
So basically, the slower charges at something like what you have at home, at the moment they're still free, but the rapid charges you've been charged for.
Yeah, the rapid charges you've been charged. And no, it's not cheap. Okay, but this again sort of...
You should charge at home. That's why it's not cheap.
Well, that's part of it. You know, you sort of say that. So if we're on the night rate at home, okay, we're roughly saying it's going to cost about 10 cents.
Per kilowatt.
A unit, okay?
A unit, yeah.
Right? If you're on the pay-as-you-go option, we'll say with the ESB, at those rapid chargers, you're paying 33 cents per kilowatt.
Okay, that'll encourage you to charge at home, won't it?
Well, what it would do is that it would mean that you shouldn't be hogging the charger for the day.
You chop up for what you need, and then you get on your journey and you get home or you get to your place. Yeah.
And for people that would be travelling a lot, they have a separate membership model that will cost you a basic cost of €5 a month, but there will be a reduced charging fee of 29 cents.
Oh, like so,
You know, so
like a standing charge, and then you get a cheaper rate.
Which, you know, it's a little bit like what you'd have at the M50 tolls, or, you know, would say if you use those on a regular basis, that you pay €1 or €2 a month to have the tag, and then you start to get you get a cheaper rate. But that's basically how they've started to roll out their financial charging for the network. And it has been noticeable in the last number of months. We'll say Ionity are a group, we'll say they're a European group that have started to put chargers in around the country as well. And they're mainly concentrating under the motorway network at the moment.
Is it Cashel? Is it in Cashel, is it?
Yeah, there's a big unit down in Cashel, and I think there's one or two opening up near Dublin towards the end, or I think within the next 6 to 8 weeks, if memory serves right. And then you have what I would call as one of the more interesting things. You have EasyGo, another company that sort of do chargers as well, and they have a lot of chargers in around the Ennis area. And again, that's a little bit like you sort of pay up, you get a fob, and then it's on a subscription rate as well to use their chargers. But one notable thing that I saw over the last few months was that Apple Green in Burt Hill, which for most people would equate it, we'll say there's a big Tesla charging
eight
charging points down there. And, you know, basically, if you don't have a Tesla, you can't use them. Tesla have basically said, you know, that's our network. It's for our own cars.
They paid for it, so they're...
Exactly, and they're fully entitled to it. So if you own a Tesla, you can use it, no problem. But, you know, for everybody else that doesn't own a Tesla, Apple Green have put in two chargers down at their premises in Burt Hill. Now, they're currently free at the moment, and I think they're going to start financially charging, we'll say, I think maybe in the next 5 to 6 months. Now, that is a very positive sign as far as I'm concerned, because this whole concept of, you know, you need to get every filling station needs to sort of start putting in electric charging points as well, because things will go and get to a stage where, you know, everybody will still be driving on the same network, the same road network, but instead of sort of pulling in, you know, for your skinny latte and to fill the car up with diesel or petrol, you'll be pulling in and you'll sort of plug it in. You know, now you might be staying for a little bit longer, but, you know, you're still topping up with a fuel or electricity as a, you know, the case may be. So
if it just went back there to our little electric car now with a 50 kilowatt battery, Look, how far do you reckon? I mean, if you're, let's say you're living in Scariff, Tungrani, and you're working in Limerick or Ennis. I mean, I know you had one there last winter for a little trial, and there is no problem in and out to Limerick or in and out to Ennis, 2 days running and then plug in and charge.
Yeah.
As regards range, you know.
Yeah, we say from the range thing, and again, this is like another one of the little myths that we try to debunk, and saying that an electric car won't go very far, you know. Now, it is true to say that the range of the car in winter is less than it is during the summer, and that's to do with, we say, the batteries and the temperatures would decrease and everything else like that. But it's the same with diesel. You won't get the range out of a diesel that you get out, you know, in the middle of winter as you do in summer. So I had what we would call so a small family hatch. No, sorry, it's not a small family hatch. It would be the Renault's always
like a super mini, whatever.
Yeah,
you want
super mini would be the best.
Clio size, sort of Fiesta size.
Yeah. And we'll say I was able to use it, and we'll say, you know, not have to, you know, have everything turned off.
You didn't spare the horses, no?
No, I didn't. No. I drove it the exact same way that I drove a, you know, say the diesel car that I previously had. And I was able to get in and out, from Tungrani in and out to Limerick twice, no problem. In and out. And then still had a little bit left to go, but I sort of charged it up and off you go again. Now, it would equate to, I would realistically say, the battery that was in that car is a 40 kilowatt, which, you know, if you're going back to trying to compare to litres, say a 40 litre tank, and I would get about 120 miles out of that. You know, I think that's nearly 200 kilometres.
But as you said earlier, most of us don't travel to Dublin every day or Cork or anything. You're going in and out. So in that scenario, I'm working in Ennis, living in East Clare, in 2 days, in and out for 2 days. Or I plug it in tonight, and I'm back up to full.
Yeah,
and there. So
and you're not plugging it in at home for sort of 36 hours. You're basically, you know, if you come home in the evening, you can sort of set a timer. You know, there's an app, we'll say, on your phone that will say, you know, the night rate electricity kicks in at 11 o'clock, and I think it goes to 8 o'clock in the morning. So you could sort of set it to charge the car between 11 and 8 in the morning. And most people, you know, most normal people go to bed generally between those hours. So it's like you'd wake up when your car might have sort of 20% left in it, and or sorry, you go to bed, your car has 20% left in it, you wake up in the morning, it's got 100%. That's it. You know, job done.
Of course, there is a scenario with, not everyone will be fortunate enough to have it, but in their workplace, I think I read there's some legislation like now, if new car parks are going in, that they need to put in a certain number of charging points.
Yeah, there is something there legislation-wise. I think it's for premises that might have more than 20 parking spaces that they have to put in two charge points. Now, you think about it, 20 parking spaces is big enough development, so I don't know if it's going to really things on the you know, the smaller side of things. But towards the end of 2019, we'll say the government came out with another strategy, you know, we'll say part of this climate change thing that they're on about, and they're supposed to be drafting new laws that would see the end of the sale of petrol and diesel cars, you know, here by the year 2030. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, but the aim of the new laws would be to try and ensure that a third of cars on Irish roads would be electric by the beginning of 2030, you know. So we're basically have to go from a scenario where I'd say we've maybe 12-ish thousand, thereabouts, electric cars on the road at the minute, to the goal that the government have set in the next 10 years of having 936,000 electric cars on the road. So
what could go wrong there?
So what could go wrong, you know?
That's now, about, so we're talking what, like 100,000?
Said 80 or 90,000 odd a year. Like there's 100,000, give or take, new cars sold in Ireland.
Of all breeds and creeds and fossil fuels and whatever.
Aside from imports, which is just nearly the same again, coming in imports. But if you said, I think it's maybe 120,000, of which I think maybe 3-4
We're electric, fully electric. You
know, so that's in the last year. So that's not going to.
There's a bit to go, yeah.
Exactly. And transport emissions account for 20% of Ireland's total emissions in 2018. And in 2018, Ireland as a country was blasted for our lack of ambition and progress in fighting climate change in comparison with some European counterparts. There was a publication, Climate Action Change Europe. So if you want to sort of search that online and have a read of it and see how bad we're doing, you can see how things are. But the report looked into how European countries performed in reaching their climate and energy targets. And if I was to tell you that there was 29 countries that they had a look at, where would you think we came in?
I say outside the top five anyway.
Most definitely outside the top five.
Near the bottom five?
In the bottom five.
Ah.
Yeah. 28th out of 29.
Sure. God, who was worse than us?
I don't know, but the research didn't go that far. But anyway, we're going to move on a little bit, and we are going to talk about the new cars that are on sale, are going to be on sale in Ireland this year, and the different manufacturers that are entering the game. And now, we spoke before in relation to there are government edicts and there are European edicts and various other different types of things that have been sent out from, we say, between the manufacturers. And we've spoken before that the manufacturers basically didn't really want to sell you an electric car up until January 2020.
And what was the reason behind that, Luke?
Yeah, well, it's sort of about getting, there are new, funny enough, there are new EU rules coming into force as of as of the 1st of January that would penalise car makers. And it's all back to their average carbon dioxide emissions. So there is, I'll give you a little bit of the
summary. This is across the whole range. Yeah. So they need to be down to a certain level.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you say take a manufacturer, would say, take Volkswagen, right? So you would go from
they have had problems in the past with their emissions.
They have, yeah. But we'll just say, we say from the Touareg, the Touran, the Passat, the Golf, and the Up is the small little car that they sell.
They've Jettas, so, and they've all sorts of...
So over the whole range, okay, and some of them would be better than others. Oh, excuse me. But over the whole range, the average carbon dioxide emissions from the cars that they sell has to be under 95 grams per kilometre. Okay? So if you think about the car that you have now, a small family hatch, would say up to about 2 years ago, a lot of them would have been under the 100 mark, but...
Yeah, I think, mine's a 1.6 diesel, and I think it's around, it's from that Volkswagen group, so we say.
Yeah.
It's around, I think, 116 or 118 or something like that.
So you, if you think about it, that would mean then that yours would have to come down about maybe 20-25%, the emissions on the car to get it underneath that average of 95. But if you exceed that limit, you would have to pay a fine of €95 for every gram over that target.
And this is the manufacturer now.
The manufacturer, yeah. And then the kicker, multiplied by the total number of cars that the manufacturer sells. So there is potential for lots and lots and lots and lots of fines. But like everything else, and I suppose as we sort of say here, there has to be a way out.
There's always a way out.
So it was said to incentivize that for every electric car that is sold, you get a credit, but for every electric car you sell, you get the equivalent of two other cars. So it basically means that for every one electric car you sell, you can sell two, we'll say, ICE engine, be it petrol or diesel, cars that exceed the emissions average level. Okay.
So this is the reason why, certainly in the EV market in 2019. There was a difficulty with supply. I mean, it's one of the reasons why there was a difficulty with the supply of electric vehicles.
Exactly. Now,
they're hanging on to them, and they've just suddenly found them now in January, and they're happy to sell them.
Yeah. Now, if you were to look at the 2018 figures, sales figures for manufacturers in Europe, right?
Okay. The what?
The bills that the manufacturers would have had to pay were £28.6 billion. So you say about 31, 32 billion.
That's in John Delaney territory, isn't it?
That's sort of well above John Delaney territory, okay? But, as I said, like everything else, so the manufacturers basically sort of started, we can't do this, and then other people said, we can't do this, you know, so fast, so soon. You know, like, there is a lot of change required by car makers. So there's a person that spoke about it, and his name is Felipe Munoz, who is an analyst for a company called Jato, who sort of are well involved in the whole sales figures and analysis of the automotive industry. And he says that there will still be large fines, but because companies will still keep selling profitable internal combustion engine cars and struggle to bring down EV prices to parity with their fossil fuel peers. It's very difficult for car makers to change manufacturing infrastructure in such a short period of time, Mr. Muno said. However, and this is where some of us would, tend to be on the more sceptical side of things, those of us that have a sceptical view of the industry that spawned the Dieselgate scandal, where Volkswagen and Daimler were shown to have deliberately cheated emissions regulations, the car makers lobbied and were successful that they got a rule that means cars emitting less than 50 grams of carbon dioxide per kilometre are eligible for these so-called credits or super credits, which is the policy that means that every electric car sold counts as two cars. So that makes it easier for car makers to meet their targets, even if the average emissions from their cars are actually higher than the rules stipulate. So that's a little bit like an Irish solution to an Irish problem. Okay?
Yeah.
Right? So now, a fully electric car has zero emissions. Okay? And some of the cars that we're going to talk about, we'll say we're going to define them as, we'll say, a hybrid or a mild hybrid, Paul. That's how you're going to describe it. And they will have emissions that, we'll say, due to the way that these things are calculated, under 50 grams. And I think short term, this is where the industry is going to go, we'll say, because it's going to be cheaper for them to have a petrol or a diesel engine and then have a small battery that will run alongside the petrol or diesel engine as well, and that can run either automatically or will run in different scenarios, but it'll have a shorter range. So if you're doing sort of small mileage, a hybrid could be the car for you, but if you're doing bigger mileage, it definitely won't be the car for you. So Deloitte, who we're talking about the FAI, Deloitte were the previous people responsible for all the figures at the FAI. Their consultants estimate that the car market is going to reach a tipping point in 2022, which is only 3 years away, when the cost of ownership of an electric car is close to or on par with its internal combustion engine counterpart.
Well, I think, Luke, now that is a critical thing. When you, the price of it, and what will put people off a fully electric vehicle at the moment, apart from not knowing and whatever like now, which they can soon learn about, but is the price.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And
if you can buy, let's say, your Ford Fiesta, you can buy it and it's sitting there. Well, this is a 1 liter petrol, or I can sell you a fully electric version of the Ford Fiesta here at the same price.
Yeah.
And then different ball game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's, as well, that now is where I'm going to hand it over to yourself. And we're going to sort of have a discussion on the new manufacturers and new cars that are going to be for sale in Ireland in the course of the next year. I suppose you could say that the big, if we were to go, we'll say, historically over the last few years, the Nissan Leaf, we'll say, has been the I suppose, the forerunner, we'll say, of the electric car revolution or evolution, we'll say, as things have gone on. It was the first mass market car produced. Then you've had a few other different cars that are there. And we'll say my little favourite one, of course, being the little Renault Zoe, which has a new version of it coming out in the next few months, which we'll say has a bigger battery and increasing the range. But then there are a number of other cars coming out. The Hyundai Kona, which we'll say from an Irish point of view is like It's like, I suppose, a Zoe on sort of steroids, size-wise. It's, you know, the SUV sort of market. It's a small SUV-type car with a smaller boot, but it has a price, we'll say, in around €40,000, and they couldn't sell enough of them here last year. And I think they've put the price up €2,000, put a bit more spec into it. So I think there's going to be a €42,000 version of it here.
That was one vehicle that was definitely in the UK. You couldn't even put your name down for one. They just couldn't get their hands on them. Now, that was more to do with, I think, battery supply. Because they could sell any amount of them, but they just couldn't make enough of them.
Yeah. Okay, so you had the Hyundai Ioniq as well, I suppose, which would have been the Ioniq would be like a family size hatchback, would be the easiest way to sort of describe that. I think it had a 28 kilowatt battery in it, but had very good range because it was quite efficient. So that's basically where we sort of stand at the moment. So you're going to run a few facts and figures and different manufacturers past us.
Yeah, I suppose the single biggest electric vehicle to come out next year, probably potentially a game changer, is from Volkswagen with their ID3. They'll be out sometime in the middle of summer, is it? Sometime around the middle of summer?
Yeah, and again, it's a little bit disappointing in that, you know, they've had they've had launch events for the ID3 in Ireland, we'll say in November. And it basically, the versions of the car that they're going to have on sale here from about June or probably July on are going to be the higher end.
There's a special edition is the only one you can order initially.
And it's a special price too. It's quite different. But we would say Volkswagen are taking an interesting way towards what they're going to do, we'll say, from a battery point of view. And this is for the people that might have, you know, what they'd class as range anxiety. So it's a clever way of looking at it. So tell us about it.
Yeah, they're going to have three. I think, first of all, they're selling, the special edition will be the mid-range battery, which is 58 kilowatt battery. But excuse me, but they are going to have a smaller battery at 45, and then the more powerful and extended range one at 77 kilowatts, which is a fair size battery.
Yeah, no, I suppose we should say to start with that the ID3 is a whole new platform for Volkswagen. It's purely for electric cars, and it's going to be used, we'll say, that platform is going to be rolled out across, we'll say, the Volkswagen network. I think that the ID4 is going to be their version of an SUV that will probably come along the tail end of probably next year. And we'll say Skoda and Seat that are also part of the, and Audi, I suppose, that are part of the Volkswagen manufacturing group, that car will be used for them as well as a platform. Now, it is totally separate from the new Volkswagen Golf, which is coming out on sale in Ireland here in March, and which will sell in big numbers, as it always has, and I think it always will.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because that's just some manufacturers, they go different routes, and Volkswagen have got one platform, especially for the electric vehicle, only for electric vehicle. Other ones, such as we're coming to now in a few minutes, Peugeot, who have decided that they have the same platform, whether it's a petrol, a diesel, or fully electric.
Yeah, so there's compromises involved there that we'll talk a little bit more about as time goes on. Okay, so we said, do you want to talk about what will be here at the start of the year, Paul, or do you just want to talk in general tones?
In general, I'm just running down a bit of a list here. It's particular order here. There's all sorts of breeds and creeds. BMW are bringing out an i4, which is a four-door saloon. They have the small little ID3, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, the Model 3. I get confused myself now.
The iX3 Rex.
Yeah. And they're also looking at, they're doing an iX3 SUV. So, of course, they have to have an SUV because everyone drives SUVs.
Everyone drives SUVs,
We all know that. Coming down a little bit, but still not really down near the lower end of the market. Citroën have a separate range, isn't it? It's the DS range.
Yes.
And they've got a cross, what they call a three crossback e-tense, which is a SUV type. And that's that's being produced now and is going on sale in the very near future. But figures again, it's you're heading 40k upwards. Yeah. It's not a cheap run around. They did mention the Fiat 500 is going to be a fully electric one. Now that's I'm sure the price of that like is going to be
that could be interesting. Yeah, and Fiat, I think that's going to be the company's first fully electric car. And like Fiat, I know are sort of gone into talks to sort of Fiat Chrysler to merge along with the likes of Peugeot and Opel. So, you know, that could be very interesting because they'll wind up, I'd imagine, sharing a lot of their technologies because Fiat are certainly late to the game as a manufacturer. Ford aren't at the game at all. But
You mentioned Ford now, just as you mentioned Ford, as a former Ford person myself here, I just need, we would have seen reviews now of a new
Mustang Sally, yeah, the Mustang Mach-E.
That's definitely an SUV.
Yeah, and there's an awful lot of people very upset about the fact that they're sort of using the Mustang name to the iconic name to not only come out with an electric car or boohoo, but to come out with an SUV, even worse.
When you say Mustang, all I can think of is was it San Francisco and Steve
Bullet?
McQueen?
Yeah. Yeah,
driving it in bullet like now. That's now this SUV is nothing like that.
Yeah, and that's expected. I think the tail end of 2020, so it'll probably be a year before that appears here.
As you mentioned earlier about Volkswagen and their platform, and certainly a few months ago it was mentioned that Volkswagen are in negotiation with Ford to sell some of the technology. And this is the way the world works these days.
Yeah.
It's extremely expensive to develop these sorts of platforms and technologies. And so companies are sharing and selling things to each other. And that's, I believe now, Ford are on our catch-up
period. As far as I'm aware, Volkswagen are basically selling half the platform and a certain amount of the electrics to Volkswagen. Ford are purchasing a certain amount of knowledge from Volkswagen to be able to produce their range. And I think then there'll be a little bit of a quid pro quo down the line where Ford will send sort of some technology back to Volkswagen as well. But I suppose it's, you know, trying to defer costs is basically what it's into, you know. And Ford probably didn't take the gamble, you know, or maybe thought it was too much of a gamble to sort of go down the electric line, whereas Volkswagen have sort of, especially after the whole Dieselgate thing, were pretty much sort of pushed into it. They had to sort of be seen to try and do something. And I think, you know, because the reason why we sort of get a little bit excited about Volkswagen doing it is because they are, you know, one of the world's biggest manufacturers. And they're doing it with a whole new platform. So it's not like they're not doing what the likes of, say, for argument's sake, Peugeot and Opel are doing, which are now under the one roof, in that you said the 2008 is a car that is going to be on sale here in the next few months, along with the Opel Corsa, which are like the small hot hatch, I suppose, equivalent cars that we would sell. They're not full-size family hatchback or anything like that. And they are basically going to be in the line along with the petrol and diesel models that they sell, and they'll just look a little bit different, but they're sort of being produced on the one line, and it's the batteries are going in a different spot.
Yeah, I mean, to the average person on the street, you could have the Peugeot 208, it could be a petrol, a diesel, or electric, and unless you really look closely, you're not going to tell the difference.
Yeah, the car looks the same pretty much. It might have an E at the end of it.
A little badge on it.
Yeah, and we've seen the electric Peugeot 2008. And
we did, yeah.
We saw it last year and we said it's not going on sale. I think it's going on sale, I think the tail end of January into February here. So it'll be interesting to just sort of see what the price range of them is. As you said, the big issue that, you know, that sort of still exists is that the price of buying the electric versus buying the petrol, the gap is probably in around €10,000 at the moment, which is too much.
Yeah, indeed.
And I suppose a little bit like, you know, we'd say once the range of the cars is starting to get to a level where people aren't going to be worrying too much about the range anymore, And then they'll start to worry about the price because, you know, unfortunately, the likes of the Kona is the best example we can refer to in Ireland in that because we said it's basically 40,000 for the electric version of the Kona. If you want the petrol version of it, it's about 23 or 24. You know, yeah. It's too much. Like you know, the electric Kona, by all accounts, is a great car, very efficient. You can get guaranteed, you know, 400 kilometres in winter, 450 in summer. And, you know, because people, there's over 1,000 of them on the road and people sort of will swear by them and, you know, they've driven them all around the place. And we've, you know, you know a few people that have Konas yeah. and they're quite happy with them. But I suppose the one thing that you would say is from a family point of view for a car, the boot is too small. So it'd be fine if there's one or two people in the car, but we'll say for a family and if there's kids involved, it's not really an option.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just you mentioned the Corsa there. That they're saying here the Corsa should be here in March, and you're talking the Corsa has the same power and the same battery as the Peugeot. It's basically the same car with a different skin on it.
Yeah.
And you're talking a range. I know the range all depends on the weather and whatever. You're talking about 330. They're talking about 330 kilometers of a range.
Yeah, so, which is a little bit lower than.
Yeah.
What we'll say, the new Zoe that's coming out, they're saying the range is going to be a little bit better than that, you know. But again, it's horses for courses. The comparison that people were making out, and you know, I spoke earlier about the charging systems, was that they reckon that the Peugeot and the Corsa if you're at a fast charger, you'll be able to charge it faster than you could charge a Zoe. But you need the charging points of that. It's a little bit too much, I think, for we don't want to confuse Paddy too much now, with how it goes.
One interesting car there that is coming out very shortly, I think in March in the showrooms, is the electric Mini.
Manufactured in Oxford, I do believe, in the UK.
That's right. And yes. They're talking that the price is from around €28,000. Now, that's interesting. That's a sort of a
That's a good price, and we'll say the Mini brand is quite strong, and would have a lot of I suppose nostalgia, and it's owned by BMW, of course. But if memory serves right, they're using a lot of the technology that they had in the iX3. Which is some of it is older technology, yeah. All right. But yeah. And that might be why they're maybe getting to the price range with it. But I suppose they're basically saying, well, we'll poke our fingers in the water here and see how it goes. And if the demand is there, I suppose they could probably say, well, okay, we'll get to the game a bit more faster.
And I'd say we're getting away now. They used to say that car companies would put out an electric car just because they need an electric car. But now this is, I think, it's getting into sort of more serious times with electric cars. And the likes of Volkswagen and all the big ones are spending billions on this sort of technology. And they don't do that on a whim and, we need to do an electric car, like just look good. No, I think now they're getting really serious now.
Yeah, I think because, it's a little bit like you sort of put your finger up to the wind and see what way the wind is sailing or what way the boats are going. And be it Greta Thunberg or, Donald Trump or everything else that's sort of out there at the moment, you look at the state of affairs in Australia over the last number of months with the record temperatures that they've had down there. I said it's different. We can see that the weather patterns around the world are changing, and we said they keep telling us that climate change is all sort of responsible for this, and we need to be doing a little bit more, we'll say, everywhere to sort of try and reduce this and get ourselves back onto a normal path. And because we won't talk about the aviation industry yet, that's a whole other day's issue, but as you said, transport accounts for 20% of our emissions, we'll say, in this country alone. So I suppose you could sort of average it out, saying that probably around the world it's probably between 20 and 30% of any country's output is, we'll say, from petrol and diesel engines at the moment. And if we can sort of, electrify ourselves and sort of reduce those figures dramatically, well, then you'd like to think we could all, it's a little bit like the good old troker days. Give a little, it would help a lot.
Indeed. And now just continuing my what's coming up.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just skip on the Porsche bit like now. The Porsche one like now. I don't think there's too many listeners going to have the money for a Porsche.
Yeah.
Your favourite, of course, like now, coming down to the Renault Zoe. a new Zoe coming out with a 52 kilowatt battery, improved range, obviously. And the most interesting I think I find about the Renault is fundamentally it's the same body shape, it's the same size as it was. What year did it come out?
Yeah, when it launched, it was announced in 2012, went on sale in 13.
13. So it's the same size car. It started with 22 kilowatts.
Yeah.
Went up to 40.
Yeah.
And has now gone to just over 50.
Yeah. So and you could say in 7 years, it's gone from 22 to 52.
In the same space.
Physical size.
Physical size. So that's where battery technology has moved on so rapidly.
Yeah.
How fast it'll move on? Who knows? But it's certainly way more efficient now.
Yeah.
And you're talking a range of up to maybe 390 kilometers. So,
yeah, I think they're being realistic in saying, given a range, probably between 200 and 230 miles. I think that's going to be a realistic range for it. Which, again, I said sorry because I can only think in miles as opposed to carry miles. But that's if you said, okay, when are you going to do more than 200 miles in a day? Would be if you go to Dublin. You know, are you going to pull in to Junction 14 or Obamaland or somewhere like that along the way? Either going up or going down, chances are that you will. If there's a charger there where you can plug in and start to top up, you know, get yourself an extra 50 or 60 miles worth of range, that's what you do. You get your skinny latte and you drive off down the road. Job done.
Most people in and out of Limerick, in and out of Ennis, something like that, Shannon, and they might never even leave County Clare.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
An interesting one there, SEAT. SEAT are releasing one now in the coming months, the Elborn, which I believe is an area of Barcelona or something. They called it after anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, but we go to back to the Volkswagen.
SEAT, of course, being part of the Volkswagen.
Part of Volkswagen,
group,
yeah. And it's on the ID3 platform.
Yes.
So I did see... I've seen reviews of it now. It looks to me a little bit sexier than the ID3.
Yeah.
But that's a personal opinion. And a 62 kilowatt battery. So a decent size.
Yeah,
that's
a big size, yeah. And the chances are it's probably going to be a few bob cheaper than the ID3 as well.
I would say so.
Yeah.
So Tesla. Now, you might say Tesla. Oh, Tesla's way up there like now. But the Model 3 is... It's not that it's starting to look. It's not that silly when you look at the likes of a Kona, in the early 40s, and I can't quote the price of a Tesla in Ireland, but
you can get one for just about under 50.
Well, you know,
yeah,
there's a difference in between a Tesla and a Kona. You know, it's horses for courses, but
they're all big money. But yeah, it's the Model Y will say, or sorry, the Model 3.
Model Y is in process now, and that's going to be a compact SUV.
SUV, yeah. Now again, the whole thing just we say relating to the Model 3, the Tesla Model 3 is probably Mondeo size, you know, Insignia size.
Is what
you have it here, but we'll say it's full of gadgetry, full of technology.
Very efficient.
Very efficient. And you said, you know, it topped the sales in Ireland in November last year. But
anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but I it'll be interesting to see how it goes for this year, Paul, because I think, you know, a lot of people, you'd have had a lot of people waiting, you know, for the car. And if you think about it,
Some people are waiting 3 years.
Or, you know, up to 18 months, 2 years. But if you think about it, if you, in Ireland, again, if you sort of want to register a new car in November, as opposed to waiting the other, you know, 30 or 40 days to sort of turn it into a 201, which I presume is what the reg plate is going to be. Is it 202? You know, it means you've some dedicated people out there. So it'll be very interesting to see what the registrations will say for the Teslas will be. And basically, this Model Y that they're going to come out with, they're starting production, I think, in the summer, which will probably mean it'll be January next year by the time it gets anywhere near here at the earliest, is basically reusing a lot of the parts of the Model 3 and turn it into an SUV. That's basically it, isn't it? So
Because we all love SUVs.
Oh, we all love SUVs, yeah. And we're going to finish the show in about 5 minutes' time with their little version of a truck, but we'll get on to that. So, okay, so move on.
And the final one, the final one on my list here now, I'm sure there are, this is not a categorical list, but is Volvo have a XC40 and going to be producing one of those with about a 75 kilowatt battery. So, again, it's a decent sized battery, talking 400 kilometer range, that sort of range. And that should be arriving later in the year as well.
Okay, and the XC40 is a...
nice car.
Yeah, nice car. That could be interesting. That could very well be interesting. I think on the lower side of the scale, the Peugeot and the Corsa and the Zoe, then you still have the big elephant in the room, Paul, is the SUV market. There is, we said, the Kona is like a compact SUV.
Yeah,
you have the e-Soul and the e-Niro, all right, that are on the same platform technology-wise, all right, that are bigger. But we'll say the big manufacturers, the likes of, we'll say, you know, you don't have a Qashqai, you don't have a Tucson, you don't have a Kadjar, you don't have a Mazda CX-5 equivalent SUV that could sort of take the market by storm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the gaps, as if we were having this conversation 2 years ago, even last year, you'd say, well, as a small little car, you could sort of buy the little Renault Zoe and that was it. Then you could buy a Nissan Leaf and then there wasn't much else out there. So, you know, nowadays we'll say in the bigger, you know, the higher end of the market, you have, you know, the likes of the Jaguar I-Pace, which is, you know, could be, is it an SUV? It's a sporty looking car. It's not quite, I think, the definition of Paddy's version of an SUV. It might be a little bit more like the UK range of it. You know, there's a few hybrids, Range Rovers that are out there as well. But if the first manufacturer that comes up with the sort of Tucson, Qashqai, Kadjar,
Ford Cougar and that sort of
Peugeot 3008. Sort of, yeah. And actually, I think Peugeot are coming out with a 2008.
They are, which is a small
yes. Now that could
crossover.
That could be interesting. I think that
looks good. That looks nice.
That'll be interesting to see how that's priced compared to the Kona, because I think they would be competing on the same sort of, you know, level, I think, to an extent, and you know, the price range.
Now, all I've discussed there, mentioned there, are fully electric vehicles.
Yes.
Now, we've got this whole thing, people get a bit confused about electric and hybrids and whatever. You've got, those are fully electric, they run on electricity, and you put no fuel, you put no fossil fuels. Yeah, you have to plug them in.
Yeah.
There. Should we say the next step down from that would be a plug-in hybrid.
Yes.
Which has a plug and has a smaller battery. It can run entirely on electricity for... let's say a range, something to talk about, a range of between about 50 kilometers, about 30 miles.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. You can get Anthem from, what's the Mitsubishi Outlander?
Yes.
Outlander?
Yep. Which is a big Jeep. Yep.
That can tow.
Yep.
Whatever. Petrol engine, but a plug-in and a small battery. From that, then, you can go down to... I suppose they are non-plug-in hybrids. So and a lot of the Toyotas would be in this category that are producing electricity when they slow down. So they have a battery that can run on electricity, but you can't choose, can you? I don't think you can choose.
Yeah, no. The whole Toyota plug-in hybrid thing is just a marketing ploy now, as far as I'm concerned.
The self-charging hybrid.
Yeah, there is no self-charging hybrid that doesn't have a plug. You know, I said if it doesn't have a plug, it's not electric, as far as I'm concerned.
You know that
you need to be able to plug it in at some stage. I think the manufacturers, you know, we spoke about them sort of trying to cheat on the I'll have to withdraw that comment.
Yeah, we'll have to get on for our solicitors then.
To, you know, try and get around the levels for the emissions is that they're bringing in, we'll say, what we call the mild hybrids. So this would basically mean that they'll have the petrol or diesel engine and, you know, maybe a small little battery that will, if you were driving around the city, it would probably get you, you know, your 10-20 miles of range. And for anyone that would say would be living in an urban area and they were sort of going to be stuck in traffic, it would be a good option, because it's not going to be as cheap as a pure petrol or a pure diesel, but it's going to be nowhere near as dear as a fully electric. So they're probably hedging their bets, we'll say, from that point of view, as to what they're going to do. I suppose, you know, we'll say the big changeover, we'll say, going from, you know, the money that they've put into developing models that are purely based on a petrol or a diesel engine to then going to, you know, the new concept of the platforms, which Volkswagen, I suppose, have started. You know, they've started the ball rolling from the traditional manufacturer point of view. Tesla have been doing it because Tesla are a company that only produce electric cars. None of their cars have an engine of any description in them. So Volkswagen being the first manufacturer that have a dedicated, we'll say, platform, you know, for doing it. And yeah, like everything else, you know, we'll say it's not going to just sort of do the ID3. The ID4, I think, which is what's coming down the line, is going to be their version of the SUV. And I think when that comes, no more than what the ID3 will be, that, I think, we'll say, could be the game changer. I think we'll be here in 3 years' time, basically having a big conversation, and the only thing we're going to be talking about is basically the cost of them.
If the cost gets the same as a fossil fuel car, then it's a different game.
Or if it gets to within 5,000 of it, because over, you know, if over the life period of a battery, you know, owning a battery charged car, you'd make that money back in spades. You know, that's where I think your mass adaption is good. Or adaptation is going.
Yeah, I mean, you've got then, is there going to be this intermediate period where you have got, now I know there are some new plug-in hybrids coming. I know in your favourite manufacturer, Renault, have their Renault Captur, which is to be coming out in the next year or so with a small battery. And that could be a lot of people's entry into the battery-operated cars.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
maybe, what, 50 kilometres, 30 miles?
Yeah, they reckon that that's what they're going to do. And a lot of the other manufacturers are coming out of it as well, Nissan as well. And I think Ford have it in one or two of their cars, but they haven't really sold them. But it's, you know, a small little sort of battery, maybe 10 or 11 kilowatt battery. And, you know, if the battery runs out, well, then you still have the petrol engine or the diesel engine. So, you know, and I suppose for people, as a way to get people into, you know, getting around to the whole concept of it, it might be the way that, you know, they'll say, oh, well, if I have this car for a few years and know it hasn't broken down, or, I've never let the battery run out or whatever else like that. And, you know, people might be more inclined to go for a full battery down the line from then on.
I suppose, look, it's a bit of, is it a carrot or a stick that I think it's going to be a bit of both. And that our petrol and diesel cars are going to become more expensive with government duties or whatever, and to even it out. And it's at a critical, I think it's a critical point anyway now. And it'd be very interesting to see all these cars we've just spoken about in a year's time, how the market is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, and I think on a, you know, taking a bigger scheme picture of things, when we talk about climate change and all the rest of it, and, you know, the likes of Bus Éireann or Dublin Bus, or, you know, even the trains, that's the next stage where we sort of start to get those running on electric, or, you know, again, with sort of hybrids as well. And not a great sign, we'll say, when the government of the day sort of buys 50 new diesel buses a day or two before these new rules come into legislation, you know. So but look, down the line, hopefully it's going to have to come in. I was actually listening to a conversation with the boss of Dublin Bus, who is a very straight talking man, and you know, has worked his way up through the company. And he says it takes 12 years to change a fleet. You know, and he says they are starting the introduction of hybrids in the next year. They've had a few on test, and but he said you have to be realistic about it. It's going to take 6 years. He said 3 to 6 years before you're going to see any big change, we'll say, on the buses in Dublin. But I would think what could accentuate it would be if you sort of look at what they're proposing in France, in Paris, and what they are already doing in London.
Ban on diesel, isn't it?
Yeah, with the congestion charge. You know, I think we're probably not, I'd say we're maybe within 3 or 4 years of it being announced. When it'll actually come into force could be another one, because then Paddy doesn't want to pay. I would say you could wind up getting a congestion charge for the centre of Dublin fairly, you know,
So rather than banning them, it's just a case if you're going to be coughing, it's going to cost you a lot of money if you want to bring a fossil fuel car
into the centre of town. Yeah, and that would sort of be a bit of a kicker to sort of try and get people to maybe sort of, you know, think about it a little bit more, you know, and sharpen the minds.
Yeah, but the objection people would have at the moment is that the structure of public transport is so poor. And you need to, this is where governments need to think a little bit past the 5-year term and put the plan in. But well, that's going to happen. You need to be thinking long term and putting the plans in.
Very, very, very much so. And unfortunately, in this country, we don't have a great history of sort of trying to plan down the line or do anything else like that. Some things we fall into by default. But hopefully things will change. So anything else we'll say from the car side of things then, Paul? What do you think could be the big ones for the year?
I think certainly the Volkswagen is going to be a big one. How that takes off. I mean, there's a lot of loyal Volkswagen buyers out there.
There's a lot of people that are loyal to a manufacturer.
And that's one thing I think now, because now you've got a much wider range than you had in the past. If you were a Peugeot person, would you change and go to an electric vehicle by somebody else? But now you're going to have a Peugeot electric vehicle. Or maybe a Volvo.
Yeah, or a Seat or a Fiat or anything else like that. Yeah, and I think give it another 2 or 3 years and there will be more than one type of electric car available from the wall. And one company that probably needs to get the lead out, pardon the pun, is Nissan, because they are in danger of falling behind where they were leading.
Yeah, the Leaf sales just sort of went down and down and down.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit like we said, they brought in the new shape of it in 2017 and the batteries got bigger, but the prices have sort of got bigger.
They have a 60-something kilowatt battery, but the price is
It's very close to a Tesla, and I think people would be more inclined to sort of go, well, I'll go with Johnny Tesla, I think, you know.
Yeah,
would be the way to go.
But certainly, look, it's. I think that's that super mini size is probably where it's really going to start. ID3 is probably going to be a little bit bigger than that like now, but
ID3 is basically a golfish size, I think.
But they say inside it's the size bigger. Of a Passat,
yeah,
because it just with the more efficient use of the space. Yeah. But certainly your Peugeot, your Corsa, your Renault, it's those ones there. And you'd have to say if any listeners living in the centre of Dublin, and you just travel around Dublin in and out to the outskirts of Dublin, it's probably soon become a no-brainer that an electric vehicle is what you need.
Yeah. I'd say we're going to have to wait a bit longer for the old SUV market, I think, to come down this neck of the woods.
Certainly. Now, and I think the biggest constraint, two constraints. One will be the price is still much more expensive than a conventional diesel or petrol car. And going back to where we started, really, the infrastructure. And get to people, you know, and get people around, you charge at home.
Yes.
And then you top up when you need to on the road at a fast charging station and you pay a few bob for it and then...
Yeah, and the whole thing with the ESB and e-cars starting to financially charge for the network, it should have the effect of bringing in competition because, you know, rather than having a situation where you could provide a charging point, but you couldn't actually charge financially for it. No one, you know, that's a recipe for sort of liquidation for a company.
Absolutely.
You know, so, but if you have a scenario where there's a bit of competition and you start saying, well, I can put a charger in here and, you know, maybe over the course of 2 or 3 years, if the demand increases and the point is working and, you know, it sort of starts to generate an income. That's where things are going to happen. And you could have companies. I know there are one or two companies inside Ennis that have a sort of a, you know, one or two charging points in outside their premises. Now, they wouldn't be fast charging, but at the same time, it's a service that are there. So you could look at a scenario maybe over the next few years where we'll say some of the pubs or shops around East Clare have sort of said, just if I put in a charging point now, you know, it might attract people, you know, close to the shop, or, you know, if there's a charging point outside the door and say, well, geez, I might go in and sort of, you know, give the shop a bit of my custom. Yeah, that's very well how things could hopefully work out. And like the charging infrastructure in East Clare, as we've alluded to previously, is pretty much non-existent at the moment. And, you know, because you can drive from Ennis out to Portumna and then come back to Portumna, come back through, we'll say, East Clare and go to Nenagh before you find a charging point.
Bit of a black hole,
yeah,
isn't there?
Yeah. You know, well, you have the DC points at Bird Hill now, so that's maybe reduced the gap by about 10 miles, but it's still a huge gap, we'll say, you know, for if you were travelling from further afield and you wanted to explore the beauty around East Clare, and you sort of said, well, I'd need to top up somewhere along the way when I'm up there, but if there's no charging points, well, I can't top up, you know, so it would put people off going there, whereas for people that would be locally, it could be handy as well if they were cut short at some stage or just needed to top up a little bit and were prepared to pay for it, you know. So
absolutely,
you know, it's a little bit like, you know, if you needed to pay 2 or 3 euros just to put a few kilowatts of energy into the car that will get you home, you'd be well happy to pay it, and then you start to charge it in your cheaper rate at home. That's my way of looking at it anyway, you know.
Indeed. I mean, I get towards the end of the program here now. I would say if anyone is thinking about changing the car, looking at a new car, it's certainly worth going in and talking to the people and go and drive one. Take one out. That's what will change people's attitudes. Get in an electric car and drive it and just see. It's an interesting experience.
Yeah, it is indeed. And speaking of interesting experiences, you said we're going to finish up, Paul, with the show that basically has the man that has probably, he's the equivalent of Steve Jobs, we'll say, and Bill Gates in computer land, that has sort of brought the car manufacturing system, I won't say not quite to its knees, but it certainly sort of caught their attention. And, you know, a lot of people said that he was mad and that he'd never sort of do anything, or that the company would never survive. They're not there yet, but they're still kicking. And we'll finish with Elon Musk of Tesla. And recently he announced what we could only call as a sort of a futuristic looking design for a
Cybertruck.
The Cybertruck that I'd say will not fit on many roads around here.
And now the Boreens of East Clare and they'd be cutting the ditches both sides.
But I've about 6 or 7 minutes of an audio thing here to play, but it's very interesting. Now the prices he's going to talk about are basically in dollars and stuff like that, but the comparison that I would give you is you look at the prices that he's sort of talking compared, we'll say, to the Model 3 are the likes of, we'll say, you know, the great other worldwide truck that's manufactured, the Ford F-150, which is the one that's
and
sort
that's
of, you know,
that they have electric one of those. Ford are working on electric
Ford
one of those
working
coming
on
out,
electric
think,
one of that, yeah,
well, in the States anyway this year.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, Paul, a pleasure as always. So that's the first plug in for the new decade, and we will
we'll be broadening our horizons next
time. We will.
Time.
We won't be talking too much about cars next time around. We'll start talking a little bit about energy. So
good
on
stuff.
That, we will say good day, good afternoon, and we'll leave you with Elon Musk.
So we'll start off with the size, the dimensions. The functionality I'm going to describe is within a space that is less than the most popular pickup truck in the United States, the F-150. So we didn't cheat in either width, height, or length. Part of this is the fundamental design change. We moved the mass to the outside. We created an exoskeleton. So normally the way that a truck is designed, you have a body on frame, you have a bed on frame, and the body and the bed don't do anything useful. They're carried like cargo, like a sack of potatoes. It was the way that aircraft used to be designed, when they had biplanes, basically. The key to creating an effective monoplane was a stressed skin design. You move the stress to the outside skin. It allows you to do things that you can't do with a body on frame. So we're able to make the skin out of thick, ultra hard stainless steel. It's really hard. We're going to show you just how hard. Yeah. Wind, I really wind up and nail it. Yeah. Franz, could you try to break this glass, please?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, maybe that was a little too hard. Yeah. In addition, the car has an adaptive air suspension. It's literally built, yeah, with adaptive air suspension. So this will come standard on all the cars. I think this is actually a very important design element because if you have every truck has the ability to adjust the ride height, so you can go very low or very high, so you can be efficient on the highway, and you can also go off-roading. It's going to have the highest clearance of any production truck, so we're going to have about a 16-inch clearance. You can adjust this on the fly. So it's adaptive damping and adaptive ride height. These are actually extremely important for a truck. What about a real world test? Like let's actually have a tug of war here with an F-150. It has onboard outlets for 110 and 100 and 220 volts. Woo-hoo! So you don't need a generator. Yeah. The truck literally is your generator. As a little plus, because it's got an air suspension, we can tap off the air suspension, so you have a pneumatic source. So you have an onboard air compressor. Of course, it will come with autopilot standard. Yeah. So there'll be three versions. That's the price without any incentives. That's just like the price without any incentives. But the actual economics are even better than that because the cost of electricity is much less than the cost of gasoline. So when you look at the actual cost of ownership here, you're paying much less for electricity than you are for gasoline. You're paying much less for maintenance. There's no oil changes, no smog checks, no nothing, none of that stuff. So your maintenance is low, your cost of operations is low, so it's actually comparable to a gasoline truck that's $10,000 to $15,000 less.